Chapter 2. Malachurst.
It is the War Master's command, said Malachurst.
The ghost image of Mortarion shimmered in the air above the burning body of the Metatron. The Death Lord's eyes were hollows above his high gorget. Fumes hissed from the vents in his armour. Looking at him, Malachurst felt his skin prickle and sweat. On the floor, the splayed body of the Metatron twitched. Blisters bubbled across its flesh. It would not survive the audience. A waste, but that could not be helped. The warp had gifted Horus's forces with many things, not least of which were means of navigating and communicating across the vast distances of space. While they still used navigators to guide most of their ships, and astropaths to send messages between dispersed forces, the subtle arts and secrets had given them greater precision than those still loyal to the Emperor could ever dream of. Through the binding of souls and the entreating of demons, they could bring ships through storms that would break the mightiest of fleets. They could speak as though they were standing in the same chamber, while half a galaxy away. But like all powers that involved the denizens of the warp, there was a price, a truth the Metatrons exemplified. All of them had once been astropaths, before their minds and souls had been split by sorcery and their souls conjoined with the creatures of the warp. Through them, the voice of the War Master could be heard by his servants as long as they also had a Metatron. But that connection cost blood and lives. In many cases, the creatures would not survive fulfilling their purpose. Malachurst had already burned through three of his Metatrons in the course of a single night.
If it is the War Master's will, then he can speak it to me with his own tongue, said Mortarion.
The Primarch of the Death Guard was leaning on his scythe, his armour shifting as he breathed.
I am the War Master's voice, and you will heed me. You are a mouth that opens but makes no sound, twisted one. He trusts and values you above all, Lord. This honour is one that he would give to no other, and he would see no other claim it from you. Yet he does not do me the honour of telling me that I will be the first to fling my legion at Dawn's walls. You are a flatterer, Malachurst. But that can only be called an honour when the command comes from the Master, not his dog. You will do this, Mortarion. He orders it so. Then he can order me to see it done.
The scythe spun and cut so swiftly that Malachurst could see it only as a blur. The image vanished. The reek of sulphur and burning sugar rolled through the air. On the floor, the Metatron writhed, flesh splitting. Blood gushed from the blind creature's mouth. A high, keening wail rose in Malachurst's mind. He held his gaze on the empty air for a second, then drew and fired his bolt gun. Blood and bone sprayed out. Silence settled in the reeking air.
To waste such material so freely, came a purring voice from behind him. That says something.
Malachurst turned, pistol rising, his eyes finding their target in a fraction of a heartbeat. Twisted he might be, but his flesh was still transhuman. He stopped, finger hovering over the trigger.
What does it say?
He asked. Nine lenses looked back at Malachurst from beneath a black cowl. They rotated slowly as he held his aim and trigger finger steady.
Maybe it says that you are merciful, said the voice.
It was female, sibilant, and wet-edged.
How did you get in?
He said slowly. The figure drifted silently closer. It was tall, or rather it seemed as though something tall had been folded under the swathes of fabric. Malaghurst's armor tingled with static as he looked at it. He held his aim.
Maybe it says that you are angered.
You will comply, Sota Nul, or I will rip you apart and have what remains fed to the Lupakai.
Maybe it says that you are cruel.
His finger pulled tense. Inside the casing of his bolt pistol, the firing mechanism was poised on the edge of ignition.
It says that if something is of no use, I am willing to discard it.
Sota Nul tilted her head.
Is that so? I will record that fact for truth analysis.
Despite all he knew of her, it was always Sota Nul's voice that made him want to burn her where she stood. It was not like most tech priests. Too emotive. Too fleshy.
How did you enter these chambers? He growled.
As the representative of the Fabricator General, I pass where I may.
Not on this ship.
Wherever the wheel turns, so may I go.
The tech witch tilted her head briefly.
Though if my intrusion has caused you emotional discomfort, I tender those apologies that will cause your humours to rebalance.
Malaghurst lowered his weapon. He took a careful breath and forced his mind to stillness. Anger had its uses. All emotion had its uses. But no matter how much his instincts told him to shoot the tech witch, he could not listen to them. Sota Nul was a disciple of Kelbor Hal, Fabricator General of the New Mechanicum. Malaghurst was not sure what she was, human, machine, or neither, but he could taste the warp craft threaded through her. Just as he was Horus's equerry, so Sota Nul was Kelbor Hal's factotum at the court of the Warmaster. He could no more shoot her than she could kill him. If either tried and failed, they would be starting a second civil war, while the first was still burning. One day that war might have to be fought, but not before Kelbor Hal and his dark mechanicum had helped set Horus on the throne of terror.
What do you want?
He asked.
Horus has not left his sanctum chambers for 38 days.
Behind his still face, Malaghurst's mind saw all of the thousands of servitors that moved through the vengeful spirit, all of the mechanical systems that lay at its bones. It was tempting to think of them as uncaring of what they saw, but such a thought would be a mistake. They saw, and they answered to the mechanicum.
That is not a matter that concerns you.
That is incorrect. It concerns us. The magnitude of our concern is significant.
The War Master is preoccupied with plans for the next stages of the war. You have seen the orders that he has issued?
That you issued, Equerry?
The War Master prepares for the next great phase of battle. His preparations will not be disturbed. I speak for him.
Sota Nul rotated her cowl towards where the remains of the Metatron lay congealing and smoking on the floor of the deck.
Your words are incomplete in truth value. I hereby register our displeasure at your response and transmit a request that the War Master convene directly and personally with the Fabricator General.
I will convey your message and displeasure to the War Master,
he said.
And now you will leave me to my work.
He met her ninefold gaze and gave a single shake of his head.
This audience is over, and you will not attend on me so again.
For a second the tech witch did not move, but then she rotated and began to drift into the dark that hid the distant entrance to the chamber.
The allies of the War Master are not blind, Malaghurst. You should be...
Sota Nul paused. And Malaghurst had the impression that she was searching for the word that would come next.
Concerned.
I am,
he breathed to himself as he heard the door reseal behind her.
I am.
Lyak. The Trisaion and the vengeful spirit met in the gulf between stars amongst the corpses of dead warships. Squadrons of battlecruisers flanked the Warmaster's flagship. Hundreds of destroyers and frigates moved amongst them, darting like small fish around leviathans, guns armed and ready, Auspex systems sweeping the debris-scattered dark. The Wordbearer's fleet approached slowly, its lesser warships holding in tight formations as they broadcast litanies of praise and supplication. Their weapons remained cold, their Auspex and targeting systems silent, their void shields deactivated. The Sons of Horus ships spread out around them, enclosing them, riding in close station, so close that their fire would strike before it was sensed by their targets. The Wordbearers held course. A blizzard of signals crossed the gap between the fleets. Identification markers were verified and code ciphers swapped and checked. The drone of the Wordbearer's greeting ached in the background of every vox signal.
Glory undivided! Glory to Horus Lupercal, exalted and most high! Glory to the anointed of the gods! Glory!
On the words went in a waterfall of voices. The Wordbearers halted within 50 kilometers of the vengeful spirit. The lesser void craft shifted position, folding back into the formation of an 8-pointed star. Thrusters fired across the fleet, burning yellow in the dark as they came to a dead halt. Only the Trisaion glided on, like a queen shedding her courtiers as she approached the throne of an empress. The Sons of Horus held back, letting her pass unescorted. Thrusters began to fire along her length, each blast scattering the ashes of 1,000 slaves that had been herded into the engine vents to bless this meeting with their ends. The Trisaion halted at last and lay still, prow to prow with the vengeful spirit, the two separated by little more than a kilometer. There they lay for a long moment, two goddesses of devastation, alike in size and power, but little else. A single stormbird launched from the Trisaion's prow hangar bays and thrust towards the vengeful spirit. Within its hull, Zardu Layak sat in the red-soaked gloom. Silence rolled through the vibrating air. 40 warriors of his chapter of the Unspeaking filled the benches, their crimson armor powdered with ashes. Tapers bearing sacred symbols hung from their pauldrons. These were the Thriceborn, the chosen of his command. Their severed tongues, set in amber and threaded on strings woven from human hair, hung around their necks. His two blade slaves, Kulnar and Hebek, sat to either side of Layak, so still that they seemed sculptures. Only the black iron and gold hilts of the swords at their waists set them apart from the rest. Lorgar stood at the far end of the cabin, head bowed, his eyes closed. The air around him shimmered in time with his silent prayers. Layak felt the Stormbird decelerate and saw the Primarch lift his head and open his eyes. A clang shivered through the gunship as its landing feet settled onto the deck. Layak stood, and as one, the Unspeaking rose with him. The front assault ramp released with a hiss. Lorgar glanced over his shoulder.
"The gods walk with us," he said,
"and their will is our strength." The ramp opened wide. Lorgar walked down into the light beyond. Layak followed 10 paces behind, his staff tapping in time with his steps. His slaves and brothers followed in his wake. The hangar was empty of vehicles besides Lorgar's Stormbird, the vast chamber running away to darkness. Sons of Horus filled that space, ranked in rows and squares, red eyes glowing from storm-green armour. Banners hung above them, all marked with the unblinking eye of Horus, woven in gold, silver and copper on black. Behind them stood the creatures of the Mechanicum, dark-robed and hunched, and beyond them were human soldiers, thousands of them, their faces lost to distance and shadow. False thunder rolled as the assembled warriors came to attention as one.
Lorgar paused and bowed his head for a single second. Three Legion warriors waited in a loose group before them. Lyak knew them all by sight and reputation. Falcus Kyber, looming in obsidian cataphracty plate. Horus Axamand, his flayed and rebonded face a mask. And, at the centre, Malachurst. The equerry to the Warmaster stooped beneath a bronze staff topped with a golden eye of Horus. In the symbol-laced vision of his mask helm, he saw Malachurst's aura ripple and billow like a tattered shroud. Whispers itched in Lyak's ears.
Kak Akwas Kashk Akami Katlashi Iso Akshami Bakar Kurani Akami.
He could see life force bleeding out of the equerry, even as the power of the souls fumed from him.
Powerful, Lyak thought.
Powerful in every sense.
Honored Lord Aurelian, said Malachurst.
Axamand and Kyber bowed their heads briefly. Lyak noted the subtle observance of power, authority, and formality. The scepter in Malachurst's hand meant that he represented Horus in this moment. He spoke with the Warmaster's voice, and as such did not show deference to the Primarch of the Word-Bearers. Lorgar smiled.
Malachurst and two of the Mournival, you do me high honour.
The words were serene, and the warmth of sincerity rang clear.
The honour is ours, said Malachurst.
The Beta Garmin front is broken, the way to terror is open, and the victory of truth is at hand. Yours is the hour. The gods know your names, and you are raised high by your deeds.
Axeman's sword wound of a mouth opened to speak, but Malachurst spoke before he could.
There is much to discuss. Please, let us make you and your warriors welcome.
My thanks. Please, lead on.
Malachurst nodded and turned. Lorgar fell in at his side. Axamand and Kyber followed beside Lyak. His two blade slaves held back just a step behind. Lyak felt the hooks on the inside of his mask dig deeper into his flesh as the warriors passed into the body of the vengeful spirit. The warp threaded its chambers and halls. It was already crawling through the bones of the ship. Half-born demons scuttled at the edge of sight. The gods themselves had walked these decks and now watched from the shadows. That was good. It would make it easier to plant the seeds that he had to.
I hope my brother will be able to receive me as soon as whatever matter delays him is resolved, said Lorgar smoothly, as they entered one of the ship's main arterial passages.
Of course,
said Malachurst without hesitation. The buzz of active power armour and the tramp of armoured feet filled the moment that followed the lie.
If I may, Lord Aurelian,
rasped Malachurst.
While we are glad of your coming, this meeting was not expected.
Does the meeting of kin and brothers need to be heralded? We are on the cusp of victory, Malachurst. A victory that we all have fought to bring about. We must draw together in this moment, would you not say?
Indeed. Messages were sent by the will of the Warmaster to that end. But they did not call you or your legion here. The summons was to Ulanor.
Messages? I am afraid that the gods have not brought your words to me. But the winds of eternity guided me here, where I am needed.
Lorgar glanced down at Malachurst.
I am needed here, am I not, Mal?
Malachurst's face showed nothing, but the vision of him in Lyak's mask flexed and shimmered.
You are always welcome in the court of the Warmaster,
said Malachurst.
In his court? What must a brother dream to wake and find his brother a king?
Malachurst started to reply, but Lorgar raised a placating hand.
I will not speak of it here, but I must see Horus. For the victory that will be ours, I must see him.
He paused again and let the quiet settle. Lyak almost smiled. The Primarch's words were the perfect balance of strength, sincerity, and humility. They tugged at the thoughts and humours like the fingers of a divine musician.
I am here to help. And I can help.
Malachurst's face remained fixed as they walked. The shadows and silence seemed to hold their breath.
The War Master appreciates your service, he said at last.
Lorgar gave a sad smile.
And I live to serve, he said.
Volk. Volk spun the Lightning Crow low. The wall of the mountainside rose to meet him, its black mass swallowing the sky beyond. Fire licked the air around him. Ground units opened up as he passed low over the crags and valleys. He could see the teeth of the crenellated towers that capped the hills and the sloped fronts of the defense lines running down the mountain's flanks. His helmet display was a blur of red warnings, threat markers, fuel status, ammunition status, and communications integrity. Out across the mountainside, the rest of his flight followed his lead, tumbling low to hug the ground as they ran back to the mountain's shelter. He felt hard rounds and pulses of lasbolts slam into his wings, more red in his eyes.
Commander, enemy emerging on your tail, called his new wingman.
Behind him, the axe blade shape of a lightning in jagged red and yellow livery roared up from where it had been clinging to the other side of a stone ridge. Volk tumbled 78611 over as las cannon fire burned past him. He could see the entrance to the hangar cavern, close but still seconds away. Seconds that he might not have.
Too far away, he thought. Too far by a long way.
The lightning was burning close on his tail. The target lock warning was rising in pitch. Volk triggered his forward thrusters. 78611 flipped over. The force emptied the air from all three of his lungs. Blood drained from his head and limbs. The fuel warning joined the chorus of alarms. The lightning held tight on his tail. Its pilot was good, very good, even. Perhaps one of those serving the rogue traders marshal that the Ultramarines had brought in to break the Iron Warriors at Crade. Las cannon fire burned after Volk as he dived lower. The mountainside was so close he felt as though he could reach through his canopy and touch it.
Stay with me!
He hissed through clenched teeth.
Stay with me!
A whipcrack of Laz skimmed the tip of his left tail fin. The Lightning Crow bucked as though stung. A cliff of sheer black glass running across the mouth of a valley rose to meet him.
Stay with me!
The lightning was close, hugging as tightly as a shadow.
Closer!
The cliff was a black wall. For a moment, the blackness before him and the scream of engines and the promise of death in his hands was everything, was the universe. The lightning fired. Volk slammed 78611 vertical, poured the last of its fuel into its engines, and roared over the cliff edge. The lightning followed, its own engines burning blue with heat. Two sets of turrets, positioned on the top of the cliff, swung up and fired. Four quad autocannons spat solid shots into the air. Explosive rounds streamed past Volk and tore the lightning from the sky. Volk watched as the hangar cavern yawned wide in front of him. The defense turrets twitched back to stillness as he entered. 78611 settled onto its landing pad, just as a final alarm sounded to say that the last of his fuel was gone. Volk snapped free of his connection to the craft before its power had finished cycling down. His helmet hissed free. The smell of fuel and machine oil flooded his nose. He vaulted out of the cockpit as the canopy began to rise.
You look like a man with somewhere else he wants to be, Commander.
The voice made him turn. He kept his surprise from his face. The anger made that easier. First Captain Forex stood at the edge of the landing pad. The bulk of his Terminator armor made his sallow face seem shrunken in its collar socket. Dark eyes glittered above a thin smile. Volk did not answer. In truth, he wanted to, but the reply that came to mind was not one to be said aloud to one of the Lord of Iron's closest lieutenants. He stilled his thoughts. His nerves were still singing with the scream of weapon locks and the slam of G-force. Aggression and kill instinct held the beat of his hearts. He paused as a trio of servitors crowded around him to fix a power pack to his back. A weapon serf in black robes and a blank, wrought-iron mask held up his bolter. The man's arms barely trembled as they braced to take the weight. Volk took it, racked the arming mechanism, and clamped it to his thigh plate. When he was done, he finally looked up at Forex, bowed his head briefly, and made to turn towards where the rest of his flight were emerging from their craft.
"Something vexes you," said Forex.
Volk turned, opened his mouth and closed it again.
"Nothing that needs to be said here,"
he said carefully, inclining his head to the nearest serfs and iron warriors. Forex looked at them and turned to move away.
"Follow,"
he said. Volk stayed still for a second, then walked after the first captain. They passed out of the cavern and into the main mass of the mountain fortress. Moisture dripped from the smooth walls of the tunnels they passed through. Servitors, human soldiers, and serfs parted for them as they walked. Blast doors opened, and they descended in lift cages down shafts braced with rusting metal. The Onyx Mountain had been just a mountain before the coming of the Iron Warriors. Mines had run through the mountain's bones, but within a week a warren of tunnels had been dug down to its root and up to its summit. Sub-fortresses and walls had been hacked into its flanks, and stores gouged into its heart. In a week. Such was the art of the Fourth and the Lord of Iron.
"You are concerned that you are being censured further," said Forex,
as they exited a macro lift into a plasteel-lined passage. Volk looked up as gun mounts in the ceiling swung around and aimed at them. Targeting beams sparkled over his armour. The guns cycled down after a heartbeat.
"This is not censure, though you may deserve it."
"For what?"
"For weakness, of course."
"Whatever the Lord Primarch wishes of me, I shall do," he said.
Forex shot him a hard look.
"If he wishes my death by my own hand, he need only command it. The iron of my blood is his."
The first captain's eyes narrowed.
"Not all iron is forged alike," he said.
Before them, the tunnel ended in a door of yellow and black striped metal. A pair of towering figures flanked the portal. Shields the size of tank turrets hung from piston-driven hands, and vast hammers rested in their grips. Cold green light glimmered in their eye sockets as shoulder-mounted cannons rotated to track Forex and Volk. These were the automata of the Iron Circle, machines crafted by Perturabo's own hand to be his bodyguard, and their presence removed any doubt as to who he was being led to.
"From faith cometh honour," said Volk.
Forex's gaze was icy. Vast mechanisms clanked within the doors. Layers of metal peeled back one at a time until the way was open to the space beyond. After a second, they walked through. The light of picked screens and hollow displays diluted the darkness within. Banks of machines and tiers of servitors wired into data cradles surrounded a central circular recess. Numerals and symbols scrolled without cease across the glowing screens and hollow projections. At their centre, bathed in the cold light, stood Perturabo. Four Iron Circle automata stood around him, facing outwards, graven statues guarding a demigod of war. The Primarch of the Iron Warriors did not look around as Forex and Volk approached. Volk had not been in the presence of his Primarch for months, not since the withdrawal from Talon, not since Volk's censure for failing to confine Horus's emissary. Perturabo had changed in that time. The bulk of his armour had grown. Bracing, armour plates, and above all, weapon systems had multiplied across his shoulders and limbs. The armour had a cold sheen to it, as though the metal were sweating a thin film of dark oil. His face was pale, the skin seemingly drawn over the skull beneath, the eyes points of reflected light in pits of shadow. He had been that way ever since he had come from out of the black sun, as though something vital had been drained from him, and what remained was being ground down to a sharp edge.
"Kneel,"
said Perturabo without turning. Volk knelt and bowed his head. Behind him, the blast doors ground closed. Forex remained standing a step behind him. He heard the Primarch turn. He shivered inside his armor, nerves pricking. Perturabo was looking at him. He could feel it. It was like the moment an enemy weapon system locked onto you, and you could feel death in the scream of the sensor systems.
"The emissary, called Argunis," said the Primarch.
Folk heard the name and wondered why Forex had lied. This was about his failure on Talon. This was about censure.
"You know him?"
Volk swallowed in a dry throat, his mind whirling. Argonis was one of the sons of Horus, a war chieftain of the 16th Legion during the Great Crusade. He was Chthonian-born, ruthless, brutal, direct, and the finest pilot Volk had ever seen. They had shared command of the air elements in three campaigns as part of the Celtius conquest fleet. They had trained together, fought together, and killed together. If such bonds could exist between legionaries of different blood, they had been friends. That had been before the War Master had begun the war against the Emperor, before the massacre of legions and the burning of the past. They had met once since on Talon. It had been a reunion that had resulted in Volk's censure.
"I fought with him, my lord," said Volk. "I know him."
"He will trust you."
Volk thought of Argonis grinning his rare wolf's grin.
"Perhaps, lord. And you?
Do you trust him?"
"No," said Volk without hesitation.
"Why?"
"You should never trust a sword that is too sharp, lord."
"Just so," said Perturabo. "And would you attempt to renew your bonds of brotherhood at my command?"
"Of course, my lord. And be his shadow, so that you would know his thoughts and motives?"
"Yes, lord."
"And at the will of your lord, knowing that he was the representative of the War Master, would you take his life?"
Volk saw again the target rune blink red over the image of Argonis's Storm Eagle as it rose above the curve of Talon's sphere. Was this a trick or a trap? Was he condemning himself to further punishment? To death?
"I am iron," he thought, "and iron is truth."
"Yes,"
he replied. The humming buzz of the data screens filled the silence that followed.
"Rise," said Perturabo.
Volk stood and met the gaze of his Primarch. It took all of his will not to raise his hands to defend himself, not to run. His instincts screamed that this was death. Death and annihilation, looking at him with a gaze as cold as dead stars.
"Is Argonis returning to us?"
he asked, forcing the words from his lips. Perturabo gave a single small shake of his head. Weapon mounts on his wrists purred as their mechanisms cycled.
"He is already here.
And he brings word from the War Master.